This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
And it's time to fire it up. I'm sitting next to the Monday Night Delight, the amazing Carla Dawson. Welcome in. I've got Jose behind the glass.
It's a good Monday. I'm ready to go.
Well, in our pre-show meeting, there was a lot of talk about kissing and Tiger Woods and the post-championship hugs and kisses that went down. Can you make sense of it all? I mean, Tiger has a girl these days, and that sort of lit up the internet, didn't it?
Tiger's the tiger.
Evidently.
It was a touchy-feely weekend at the PGA Championship, that's for sure.
So after he walked off, he got a nice little hug from his girl, and she and he gave a kiss, and everything looked warm and fuzzy again for Tiger.
And then he got a booty swat.
Yeah, that's a little alarming because this was not his girl giving him the booty swap.
Oh no, it was his girl.
Oh, it was?
Yes.
Okay.
But even so, I wouldn't booty swap.
He's always been proud of his glutes.
Yes, he has.
Remember, he always talked about how his glutes affected his game? Well, she was just testing to be sure his glutes were still in good shape.
Apparently, it's affecting her game, too. So there we go.
Evidently. But then there was another encounter with Brooks Koepka's girl, right?
Okay, that is the head scratcher. Jenna Sims.
Yes.
So she, you know, Brooks goes into the room to sign his scorecard.
We're talking about PGA champion Brooks.
Yes.
I mean, he won the tournament, recall.
Third major in six starts, Koepka.
Yeah, Tiger didn't win it. He did.
No, Brooks did.
Okay.
Brooks did.
And then what happened?
Well, he turned his back to go into the room to sign the card, and she and Tiger embraced, and the look on her face after that embrace, she is absolutely starstruck. I'm like, Brooks, you need to come back out. Sign that card and come back out.
So you're saying Gina Sims, Brooks' girl, was all abuzz about Tiger.
You've got to see it.
This bothers me. And I might say it's the embodiment of all of America yesterday because it was Brooks' tournament, but Tiger's day.
The Tiger effect is real.
Mm.
It affects all aspects of golf. And girls.
Well, he got a kiss from his girl, a little swipe on the glutes, and then a big line look from Brooks' girl. All right.
It's worth a check on social media. That's a good one.
All right. Well, we're going to move on from Tiger to Urban Meyer and all things going on at Ohio State. We're going to look at college football when we return. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, Carla, if I were to ask you to name the top two coaches in college football, who would be the top two at your list?
Definitely Nick Saban, and it's a toss-up between Dabo Swinney and Urban Meyer.
Okay, I thought you'd say Urban Meyer. I guess you're not going to say DJ Durkin of Maryland.
I am really not going to say that.
So I'm going to say we're near the top of the heap with Urban Meyer, who's in the news, and near the bottom of the heap with DJ Durkin.
Both in the Big 12 and the Big 10, I might add.
Both in the Big 10, both with controversies this week. Of course, Urban Meyer all embroiled in the question of what he knew about Courtney Smith and her husband and whether, in fact, when she was beaten, did Urban Meyer know? Did his wife tell him? And Urban Meyer, as we sit, is on paid leave from Ohio State University. The university is investigating this. Where do you see this headed? Do you think there's any chance Urban Meyer's not coaching Ohio State this season?
I really don't. I think he's too important to that university, and I think they're going to. And the fact that the university is itself conducting the investigation,
right?
You know, like with Baylor, they brought in an independent firm to do all of that. But there's too much at stake at Ohio State. I mean, football is their bread and butter. That's what Ohio State is known for. I don't think that's right, but I do think that's what's going to happen.
Well, to your point, there's a lot of money at stake here. Football is a big profit center for the institution. Mm-hmm. Urban Meyer is one of the two or three best coaches in all of college football. He's delivered at Florida. He's delivered at Ohio State. rendered a great deal of profit to the institution. There's certainly going to be an investigation bias to protect him.
When you look at this, if you're Ohio State, when he took over the Buckeyes in 2012 after Jim Tressel, his record since then has been 73-8 with the national championship.
Amazing.
73-8.
Yep.
That's astounding. And sad to say that winning cures all ails. You know, you look the other way when they're winning. I don't like that. I'm not saying that's okay. But I think, too, it's going to be tough for an athletic director at, like, an Ohio State. Urban Meyer makes hand over fist what that athletic director does. So we're in the chain of command. Who listens to who? Is the athletic director who makes, I'm sure, a decent salary, but nothing like what the Sabins, Sweeneys, and Myers of the world are making? Is he really going to tell Urban Meyer how to run his program or what needs to be done differently? I mean, where is the chain of command when that kind of money is
involved? It's a hard thing. These coaches, particularly the big programs, and particularly when they become so successful, they are the celebrities. They are the bigger names. The AD is almost taking a back seat.
Right.
So it is hard to tell the AD you've got to discipline the bigger dog in the house.
And I wonder, too, because when this first broke with the allegations that came out that, you know, this happened in 2009 and then again in 2015 about his wide receivers coach, Zach Smith, he was very, no, it didn't. I didn't know. He said that at Big Ten Media Days.
Yep.
Well, when more came out, Courtney Smith spoke to the media and text messages where, you know, McMurphy broke that story. Then he came back and said, okay, well, I wasn't exactly, I should have said this. I wonder if the university is going to be able to say, well, he did admit that he lied and we're working through this. You know, I can see where this is going to come around. They're going to try and save his job for him.
Well, I think it could come out as excusable that, well, when he said to the media day, I don't know about it, I'm not familiar with it. When he said that, I think it's excusable in the sense that it wasn't his story to tell and it was a question that was sprung upon him. I think that's the excusable piece. The harder piece he'll have to answer to, of course, is what did you know and what did you do about it? And I think his positioning back maybe, well, I did know about it, but I've been working with the couple. We were friends with them. There was counseling involved. I mean, my reaction when I first heard about it is, why did he stick up for this guy at all? Why did he even bring him along? Why didn't he just fire him? I mean, who is Zach Smith? Who cares, right? He's a wide receivers coach. It's not that impactful to the organization.
He should be expendable.
It seemed to me, I mean, with no disrespect to you, Jose, behind the board over there, but I mean, he's glamorous behind the glass, but if Jose runs into big trouble, I mean, it's Zach Smith.
Carla goes behind the glass.
No, not Carla. Now, see, this is the difference. I mean, with Carla.
That's making Jose real nervous
but
now.
But then it took some digging. But Zach Smith and Urban Meyer have a long history together.
It's an incredible history. So Zach Smith is the grandson of Earl Bruce, who was the coach at Ohio State who succeeded Woody Hayes.
Yep.
And he and Earl Bruce and Urban Meyer go back to 2001 when Urban Meyer was breaking into coaching and he took the job at Bowling Green at Earl Bruce's urging. Okay, so then a year later, Zach Smith, Bruce's grandson, walks on at Bowling Green. So that's how that happens. He plays for Meyer then. It just continues. Then when Meyer gets to University of Florida in 2004, guess who follows him as the quality control assistant and then eventually a graduate assistant? It's Zach Smith again. So, and all of that was pre any allegations with his wife, Courtney Smith. In 2009, though, while at Florida, Smith was arrested for aggravated battery at Florida under Meyer. And then in 2010, Meyer leaves Florida, you know, under health concerns. 2011, takes the job at Ohio State. Guess who he brings with him?
Amazing that he was taking him with him. And this is a guy with a troubled history, right? He had run into trouble at Florida.
Absolutely.
Urban could have easily used that move as a way to distance himself from Zach Smith.
And the interesting thing is somewhere in the middle of between the later part of Florida and before Ohio State, Urban Meyer is quoted as saying, I am in awe of Earl Bruce, and which is great. So you think, you got to keep him around. But Earl Bruce passed away this April, right about the time that all this was starting to break. So there's a long kind of incestuous bit of history with these.
Yeah, and I think it is that collegiate community that mm-hmm. exists. It is real.
It's a fraternity.
So there's Earl Bruce's grandson on the staff, and that's a hard thing to separate in Zach Smith. But just that's the one thing when you look at it, you wonder why that. Why did he put a stake in the ground and defend Zach Smith and cling to him so long?
Well, do you think, David, do you think Urban Meyer survives this? Is he going to be the head coach of the Buckeyes this year?
I do think he'll survive it. I think there's too much success there. I think mm-hmm. they're going to find a way to make the punishment all about Zach Smith and not about Urban Meyer. And I have to believe that when opening game starts, if he's not coaching an opening game, he'll be on the tail end of a suspension. Maybe they'll have him sit out for two games or something. But I yeah. definitely believe Urban Meyer survives this crisis.
What about Zach Smith? Does he coach again?
Whew. Well, this is a world
of football is forgiving. I hate to say it, but it is.
Second and third and fourth chances. He's going to have to take a season off, regroup, and convince somebody that he's got his life on the right track. Mm-hmm. But it will not be at Ohio State. He'll have to go, well, probably many levels down mm-hmm. and find some smaller job, hopefully not at a high school level.
Right, clearly.
We'll see. But DJ Durkin, another name we talk about, he's the, well, was the head coach of Maryland, and he's run into trouble for what has been dubbed a toxic culture, where they really worked their team so hard that it led to, a death on the field with one of the players who was overheated at 106 degree body heat.
That's unbelievable. Overheated at a practice at the end of May, died 2 weeks later in June. And what's so fascinating about both these situations, they're obviously very different, Ohio State and Maryland. You know, one is domestic abuse and the other is actually player abuse, verbal, you know, emotional, physical, everything else. Both schools in the Big Ten, both schools put their coaches on paid administrative leave, both in doing an investigation. I don't think DJ Durkin survives this because, A, it's Maryland. And they just extended his contract, gave him a big one. You know, he's doing better with the program. But they have found current and former staff members, coaches, players that have confirmed this culture of bullying, verbal abuse, humiliation, obscenity-laced epithets, mocking players' masculinity. It goes on and on. And this has resulted in a loss of life. I don't know what else to say about that. I don't think they survived that.
Nope.
And they shouldn't, honestly. And there's several of the staff members, the strength coach in the athletic department that are all kind of overheading, you know, oversee this program, and they're all on suspended as well right now.
All right, when we come back, we're going to move to a happier topic. We're going to get a chance to visit with Gene Tennis. He is the former Oakland A, he was one of those World Series champions. He's got 6 World Series rings on his fingers. It will be Gene Tennis talking baseball when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
If you need auto parts but can't get to the store just yet, head to O'ReillyAuto.com. You can buy your parts online and pick them up in any one of the 5,000 O'Reilly Auto Parts stores nationwide. No shipping costs, easy returns, and convenient pickup on your schedule. Shop your way. Shop for the parts you need at O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, joining us now on SB Nation Radio, it's a real treat. He is a guy with 6 World Series rings, the former catcher of the Oakland A's. He is Gene Tennis. Gene, welcome into the show. Gene, before you get started, I need to tell you that Carla Dawson may be the biggest Oakland A's fan in Houston. And by the way, she's always trying to get me to grow a Raleigh Fingers mustache, and I don't think I can pull it off. Welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure. There's not too many people can pull that one off. Raleigh's kind of unique.
He's unique, and Charlie Finley's not around to pay you all $200 for the mustache, so
actually,
he's not as motivated.
Short change is $100. It was $300.
Oh, it was $300. Well, I should have known. He's a big
spender. That was big money back in those days.
Seriously, it was. Gene, I have to tell you, my very first professional baseball game was June 23rd, 1972, Oakland A's in Oakland versus the Minnesota Twins, and there you were. And I've been hooked ever since.
Bless your heart.
So I know in 1970, you caught Vida Blue's no-hitter. As a catcher, what is that moment like to catch a no-hitter?
Pretty special, you know. You think you're really you're a genius, but actually he's doing all the work. You know, but actually the sad thing about that whole thing is people don't realize he was one pitch away from a perfect game, and Harmon Killebrew was the hitter, and he was my idol as a player when I was a kid. And he threw a 3-2 pitch right down the middle of the plate, and the umpire called it ball four, and Vida went on to throw a no-hitter, and I told the umpire, he said, you know, that's Harmon. I said, I know exactly who the hitter is. I said, I'll give you the corner. But this kid just pumped that thing right down the middle of the plate. I mean, you can't miss that pitch on any hitter. But anyway, that could have been a perfect game. That's how close it was. Could have been a perfect game for you to call that pitch.
We are talking to Gene Tennis. He is a 4-times World Series champion as a player, 2-time as a coach and manager, and he played with the Oakland A's, a World Series MVP. Let's talk about your Oakland A's. They are making an aggressive run here, beating up on the Astros or catching up on the Astros. It's a really exciting race now.
Yeah, you know, they got a good bunch of young kids. They got some, you know, the core there is they got some nice young talent, and it seems like the pitching is starting to pick up a little steam with for them over there. So, and you know, they're young and they're hungry, and you never know what could happen when you get a team like that. I tell you, there's probably a lot of teams right now are not looking forward to playing this club.
No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, they currently hold the 4th-best record in Major League Baseball right now after 3 seasons of last place in the AL West. So this is going to be exciting for them. So, Gene, considering the resources of the Oakland A's, which you know well, how do you assess the job that Billy Beane has done as the general manager?
Well, yeah, I think he's done a good job. I mean, I don't follow that organization that closely, but, you know, they're pretty strapped as far as what they can do with their money, you know, that they got coming in. They're not a big market team. There's a lot of them like that, but, you know, they've been able to make trades and get some young talent and develop the talent, and now they're starting to rake some of the benefits from the guys that they moved on and picked up some young kids.
We're talking to Gene Tennis. He's a former Oakland A's catcher. So let me ask you about this race, the A's now just within a few games of the Astros. How do you size up the two teams, Astros versus A's?
I still think Houston's going to win the division. I think Oakland will win the wild card.
Yep.
It's until somebody can, you know, knock off a world champion, they're still the favorites for me, regardless of with all the injuries factors. I think those players will eventually come back, and then they'll make a big difference down the stretch here in the last month of September. But it's going to be tough to overtake them. They got a quality club in Houston, and I just think Oakland's done a great job. And, you know, it's got a big series starting tonight with Seattle, so that's going to be interesting to watch.
Great series coming up. Okay, so post your playing career, you spent some time as a hitting coach, and it's interesting to see how the philosophy of hitting has evolved over time. As I read it, you were a guy who said grip and rip it, a guy who was willing to go after the ball. And, of course, there have been an era where everybody sat back, took the first pitch, tried to work up a pitch count, get the starters out of the game. There was an era of the Walt Reniac era of hitting the ball down to the ground. Now it seems perhaps there's a shift back. Talk to us about the philosophy of hitting and how you see it today.
Well, actually, that wasn't my philosophy, grip and rip it. My philosophy is hit strikes and be in position to hit. You know, this is what I'm noticing nowadays. The kids are up there in a take mode instead of a hitting mode. And when I was a hitting coach, I want my guys to be in a hitting mode and then trust their eyes, what their eyes are telling them. And then you'll determine whether it's a strike or a ball. And then you're in attack mode and you're ready to swing. But when you're not ready to swing, when you step in the batter's box, you're going to take good quality pitches. You know, so it's just a lot of different philosophies. I was a fastball hitter, and the best pitch in the game is still the fastball. So I like to get my guys, you know, get on the fastball, but get it in the strike zone.
Is there a hitter today or a set of hitters today that impresses you the most?
Well, there's a lot of great hitters. Trout. I mean, you got Trout. You got the kid in Boston, Martinez.
Yep.
I mean, Cabrera. I mean, you got a bunch of young kids over there, that little second baseman. That little dude, he's something else. What's his name? Altuve?
Yeah, Jose. Yeah, that guy. That MVP guy. Yeah.
Jose Altuve.
We love him in Houston, for sure.
This guy's about 5'5", 5'6", and you know what? He plays up to about 6'5". I mean, this guy is a baseball player.
Yeah, he really
is. I like the kid Springer. I like your third baseman. I mean, you got some nice talent there. You got some good hitters, and somebody's done some nice job with them over there. I also had a chance to work with Jeff Luhnow over there with the Cardinals, so I know Jeff's done a great job with that organization.
Yeah, we're really lucky to have him. That's when things really turned around. He was brave. He set in a philosophy, and there we went. So let me ask you, Gene, about the defensive side of the ball. So today, what makes a great catcher, do you think, in Major League Baseball today? Because most people are looking at batting average, home runs, throwing out base runners. But talk to us about what you think makes a great catcher and goes into game management.
Understanding what your pitcher's strengths and weaknesses are. You know, you have to be able to catch the ball, obviously, to play that position. You have to have really good hands, and you have to have the ability. I call it a football mentality, where you're going to deal with pain, you know, throughout the summer. You're going to be banged up all summer long, and you got to be able to play with pain. And you find a guy that can do that. You know, he's mentally tough behind the plate, and he also understands the concept of what his role is behind the plate and the importance of his role behind the plate and how he can get a starting pitcher through a critical part of a game, whether it's one or two innings stretch, and all of a sudden the guy finds himself. You know, those guys are very valuable people for me. Is able to pick a pitcher that comes out of bullpen and he doesn't have his, like, a breaking ball to start the game, but he's got a fastball and changeup, but to continue to keep throwing that breaking ball until he gets a feel for it, and don't just put it on the back burner and try to get by with two pitches. That's a good catcher, you know. And blocking balls, throwing. And they don't block the plate anymore, so that would have been one of them, too. But, you know, just a mentally tough kid behind the plate and understands, the concept of what his role is and is willing to do whatever it takes to get the most out of pitcher. Because once the game starts and you're behind the plate, you can't think about your offense no more. And you can play any other position on the field. You can go out there and stand out there, and you can think about your last at bat. You can't do that as a catcher. I mean, there's some guys that have tried that, and they paid for it because of their inability to run a ball game as a catcher. You got to put your hitting on the back burner, put it off on the side, and you got to get focused and try to get the most out of your starting pitcher.
So, Gene, would you say that the catcher makes the pitcher or the pitcher makes the catcher?
I think it's a combination. I don't think it's one, really. I think a good catcher can make a young pitcher a better pitcher. And I think a veteran can make a young catcher a better catcher just because he knows how to – he has good location of his pitches, you know. But and you have to – there's times you're going to have to, have conversations with a starting pitcher during the course of a game, and you got to learn, you know, what kind of makeup that kid's got, what can he handle, if you can get on him, or if you have to be a little bit more soft hands with him, or you can get hard with him, and you got to know a lot about his personality. That makes a good catcher.
Well, you're the best, Gene. So I hope all these catchers are listening. They just got some great advice if they were. That's for sure.
That's Gene Tennis. Gene, thanks so much for joining us on SB Nation Radio. Really appreciate you taking the time today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. You guys take care, and I'll be watching you all in the playoffs.
All right, Carla, I will grow a Rally Fingers mustache in honor of Gene Tennis.
And I will give you $300.
300? That's the number.
Yeah, he upped it from my original 200.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk a little NFL. We're going to look at the rookie quarterbacks after week one. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
So it's always hard for me. We listen to those commercial breaks, and I'm going to stop listening because there's a guy in there who keeps telling people about how to deal with hair loss.
Oh, I'm looking at a full head of hair with you, boss. You're good.
That's a very nice thing to say. That's a little gloss reality that I live.
We have hair and faces for radio. No one has to know the truth.
Okay, well, I'm going to listen more closely to that advertisement. I can find some help there from Four Hens or somebody. Well, shift gears to the NFL, from my hairline to the rookie quarterbacks. There was a lot of activity this week. It's really fun to have the NFL back underway and to see these guys at work again. Who stood out to you? What rookie quarterback turned your head?
Well, both of them from the Pac-12. And I have to say, obviously, Sam Darnold did. I think he turned a lot of heads, especially in Jets Nation.
You bet.
But, you know, it all needs to be a bit tempered, too. There is no game planning going on.
Right.
Well, A, because there's no film on these rookie quarterbacks in the NFL,
yep,
facing an NFL defense. But also, everyone is concerned about seeing what their own players are doing. This is the test period, you know, of course. So I try and get myself to kind of temper my excitement or expectations. So while Darnold looked absolutely amazing, and what was even better than his numbers, which his numbers were fantastic, 13 of 18 for 96 yards and a touchdown, I'll take that all day long.
You bet.
Was seeing Josh McCown interacting with him. Class personified. I mean, coaching him on the sidelines, cheering him on. It was really amazing. I mean, Sam Darnold has got himself in a fantastic situation. And Josh McCown does, I know, when his playing career is over, want to go into coaching. And everything I'm seeing, he's going to be a fantastic coach. That was awesome.
Well, there's another Jets quarterback I want to give a shout out to, which was
Teddy
Bridgewater. Bridgewater looked pretty good to me.
He looked great.
He moved around in the pocket well for a guy who's come back from really a devastating leg injury. He threw the ball well. He moved the Jets offense. Dare I say, there are too many good quarterbacks on the Jets roster.
Okay.
Is that possible?
I don't even know that sentence can be accurate. But I do think you're right. What do you think is going to happen with Teddy? Are they going to be happy with their three quarterback room? Is it going to be symbiotic, or are they going to have to do something?
Well, I guess if I were sitting in the chair of a Jets fan, the ideal would be that all of them would be good. McCown could be a great backup mentor. Sam Darnold could be the starter. And you could trade Teddy Bridgewater for some real draft currency for next year, or a real player. Because Bridgewater is a guy. Remember, he was drafted in the first round. He had the devastating injury. Mm-hmm. Never really got on a track with the Vikings. But if he can come back healthy, there is perhaps a high ceiling for Teddy Bridgewater. And somebody ought to look at him.
He's going to have to go someplace, though, that has a good offensive line, which is hard to find in the NFL because he is quite a commodity. And you're right. He came back from it devastating. It was more than the ACL.
Well, it is interesting how quickly the trade rumors have already come about that Bridgewater might be on the block. He might get traded. I really like him for the Buccaneers because if I'm sitting in the chair of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I am not comfortable with Jameis Winston as my long-term future at quarterback.
But voila. We've
yes.
got Ryan Fitzpatrick to start the first three games of the season. You feeling good now?
I hate to overlook Ryan Fitzpatrick. Ryan Fitzpatrick, to me, is a very good guy to have as a backup. He can come in. He can fill in for three
Super
or four games.
Backup.
He's a solid backup, a great guy, a smart guy to have in the locker
mm-hmm,
room.
Mm-hmm.
No dismissing who he is, but he's also not the future of that franchise. And I don't think Winston is either. Maybe Bridgewater is worth a gamble. I don't know what it would take, but if you were the Buccaneers and you could get a Teddy Bridgewater for perhaps a fourth-round pick, bring him on the roster, give him some time this year, get a good look at him, and test to see whether he's the guy you can bet on in a post-Winston world.
I think the Buccaneers have to think about not only is Winston capable of being their franchise, but does their fan base want that? Because there's, you know, after this latest incident where he's going to start the season on a three-game suspension for groping the female Uber driver.
Excuse me?
Super special. Who's surprised? Not me. But anyway, that is how Jameis rolls. But do they really? I mean, there was a lot of fan feedback. Like, we don't want him leading our franchise.
Right.
And now, you know, they're going to have to.
Whole history, too, that goes all the way back to college.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, this is a guy who has a record of continual misbehavior.
And he says he learns from it, but then turns around and does it again. And he's going to be, you know, wanting $20 million season type of money. And is that what Tampa Bay wants to bet their future on?
Nope. It's time to look for an alternative in Tampa Bay.
I like the Teddy thought, David. That's good.
Well, we'll see. Another team that now has two quarterbacks in competition are the Cleveland Browns, a place you once said is where quarterbacks go to die.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yet now there are two of them in play.
You know, hey, good for Cleveland. I like what they've done. Tyrod Taylor is young. He is 29. And look what he did with the Bills last season. Yep. Brought him to the playoffs after a 17-year drought. This guy did not get enough credit in Buffalo and did not have probably enough of the pieces around him that he needed. So, and Hugh Jackson, credit him. At least this is what the word on the street is now. Tyrod Taylor is our starting quarterback. That takes, you know, all the guess away from it because there is so much hype around your boy, Baker.
Love Baker Mayfield. Love to watch him, and he showed well. He threw some good passes. He dodged a few bullets. He took some chances that could have gone the wrong way. But for a first outing, I thought Baker Mayfield looked like he belonged on that stage. Showed a lot of poise. The game wasn't too fast for him. I think that's what the Browns were hoping to see out of Baker Mayfield.
Here's what, you know, while all that is very exciting for Cleveland, I mean, honestly, if they win two games, they've improved. You know, I mean, they win one game, they've improved from last season as they're 1-32 for the past 2 years. Here's what I just kind of scratch my head about. You know, they have this wide receiver who did not tell them, is it Callahan?
Yes.
Callaway. For the marijuana possession.
A little bit of trouble.
Do you know what the punishment was?
Yeah, he had to play more.
He played all 54 snaps, like on offense. That was the punishment. Like, what? Do you think that is a logical punishment? He had to be on this field for all 54, you know, offensive play calls involving him.
Right. I guess what? That sort of logic, and I don't like it, but it's at a practice, we're going to punish you by making you run laps. We're going to make you run more sprints. We're going to make you do push-ups. You're going to have to do more work. And what that implies is that getting to play in a game is not fun, but work. And maybe it is in that context. This is a guy who might not have gotten many snaps in preseason because you don't want your starters to get banged up. So they exposed him to risk. I don't think that's a smart way to deal with a marijuana issue. You can find other ways to penalize a player, punish a player, than have him play football. That just doesn't make any sense to me.
Like natural consequences. You know, he did lie to them. He kept it from them, and yep. They somehow found out. But, you know, we were talking in the earlier segment about McNair from the University of Maryland who died because of this exhaustion. Like playing all 54 snaps, and he's calling to get himself taken out, and they're not doing it. Just a kind of a Brownsy sort of way to, I don't know. I just thought, as long as it was safe, I guess I'm okay with it. I don't know that it makes sense, but I would want to make sure that medically he was okay.
All right, let's talk Browns receivers for a minute. There, we got a problem with Callaway. Jarvis Landry is there. He's their big signature guy. They've signed. Josh Gordon is out dealing with his personal issues. He's got a history,
hopefully he's coming back.
History of anxiety. He may come back.
Yeah.
The bat signals in the sky. They are waiting. And it's got a big D,
DB.
Waiting for Dez. When is Dez going to show up in Cleveland?
Well, you'll have to go to social media for that.
Well, evidently.
Because he doesn't, you know, John Dorsey, the new GM in Cleveland, who's doing a fantastic job. I'm going to give him a big shout out.
Really?
He has reached out to Dez, and Dez has not returned his calls, so obviously they're not thinking he's interested. However, social media, he says, Dorsey, I'm coming. I'm coming to Cleveland. I'll be darned.
The whole of it, though, so I'm going to give a counter view of Dorsey. First of all, in the draft, I didn't want him to do Mayfield. I thought he should have gone with Darnold and Bradley Chubb. He could have come back with Bradley Chubb. Those two picks, Darnold and Chubb, I think would have been the best two for him. Now he's declaring he can't get a hold of Dez. That doesn't make him look very good. What is going? I mean, why should this be so hard? Dez needs a team. Cleveland needs a receiver. I might even argue that he's not a great fit, that Dez is a guy who will be disruptive, that a young quarterback in Baker Mayfield doesn't need Dez coming back to the huddle saying, throw me the ball, throw me the ball, throw me the ball, leading Mayfield to force it. I would argue that
Mayfield, you're already thinking it's going to be Mayfield, aren't you?
Well, I think that day's coming. I'm going to predict that Mayfield will start by game five. I'm going to give Tyrod the first four, perhaps, and then the Baker Mayfield era will start. That's
you don't waste a number one pick on a quarterback if you're not going to play him.
Well,
honestly.
And not a guy who you've really declared to be the future. Yeah. He is the franchise, the face of the franchise. Dorsey came out. Well, he went out on a limb to pick him. I mean, not many people thought Baker Mayfield should be the number one overall. Not when Darnold was an option, and even when Josh Rosen was a consideration, or maybe even Josh Allen. Those were all guys stacked up against Mayfield. Mayfield was not a clear number one. Dorsey went on a limb, took him. I think he wants to see him on the field and see him on the field this season.
I think John Dorsey had intel that Mayfield comes with an RV. You know, the yes. secret quarterback room.
There is a secret quarterback room. It's still
Complete
existing in
Fortnite.
Cleveland.
Yes.
So that's Mayfield and it's...
And Tyrod and Taylor.
Just those two, right? They go off and play... They go into an RV and they play video games or they have secret quarterback meetings. It's not really clear what goes on in that room.
Yeah, probably better we don't know.
Wait, you've got an answer, Jose.
While I have you, Mr. Gao, could we sort of get like a producer RV where we just kind of
a producer
hang
RV.
Out and...
And I say, what would you do in that producer RV?
Produce. Get ready to produce.
Well, there we go.
I'd see a lot of scantily clad women going back into an RV with Jose. I don't think we can allow any of that nonsense.
Jose's a ladies man.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean,
they're following him in a line.
They don't call him
everywhere
Jose
he goes.
For nothing. I mean, it is what it is. There's no reason to hide this.
Yeah, yeah.
Tiger Woods, Jose, same sort of idea.
Jose, lady killer.
Yeah, but people aren't randomly patting his glutes.
No,
that we know
not
of.
Here at least, no.
Maybe that's why he needs the RV.
He needs to go and do that in silence. All right, well, the Browns are looking suddenly like the team to beat. Actually, I'm not going to call them that, but I will say my over-under on wins for the Browns, they're going to win. Over-under, I'm going to put the game total at 5. You going over or under, Jose?
You know what? I'm going to go over.
Yes, an optimist.
I might go over, too.
See, that's the intriguing thing. Suddenly, there's Browns fever breaking out everywhere.
There is. So that's why I credit John Dorsey.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are the same coach.
Yep.
A lot of the same things in Cleveland. But John Dorsey has at least spiced it up a little bit. And he did a great job in Kansas City. So let's see what he's got for this year.
All right. He's an old school kind of guy.
He's an old school kind of guy. I like that.
I want to give a shout out to my Cowboys, who looked pretty good in the opening game. Now, they lost to the 49ers late, but that was when all the scrubs were on the field. Cowboys showed well. There were a couple of standouts that really were exciting to me, not the least of which is Jalen Smith.
Mm-hmm.
He is now in his third season and really looks like he's fully recovered from
best comeback story in the NFL.
The way he is playing right now, he ran downfield 30 yards in pass coverage. He was blitzing up the field. He was tackling running backs in the backfield. It would be an extraordinary comeback story. And when I'm told the reports out of Dallas, day in and day out, nobody works harder than he does. Nobody really worked harder at his rehab. So Jalen Smith on the way back, and that would really round out an extraordinary linebacking mm-hmm. core for the Cowboys. Could you have Leighton Vander Esch, their first-round pick, Sean Lee, of course, the All-Pro, Jalen Smith, and actually Joe Thomas showed well. Joe Thomas, a free agent signing the Cowboys picked up from the Packers. He looked exceptionally good. Cowboys defense, Cowboys linebacking core, looks like it will be the best they've had in years.
Well, that's good news for you.
I would say. I will give you a moment for your Raiders. Marshawn Lynch looks like he's got his speed back.
He looks like a youngster.
It was amazing. He outran that D-back 30 yards down the field. D-back had an angle on him. Lynch has the wheels still.
Thank you very little, Colton Miller, for that holding penalty, but whatever, it's a preseason
Colton
game.
Colton Miller, your first-round pick on the Raiders. A guy everybody thought the Raiders stretched. They reached to go get him, and they need him. They need that offensive line to get back on track.
Yeah, the tackle out of UCLA.
Derek Carr.
No, I thought that was great to see Marshawn in action like that. His wheels are still smoking.
And I'm going to give a shout-out to the Texans' new tight end, Jordan Akins. He looked exceptional.
Didn't
he just
he look
looks
great?
The part. I mean, he's big, tall, lanky, 6'3", 250, and he brought the ball down. Texans need a tight end, and this could be a perfect fit. Jordan Akins of the Texans, somebody to watch as we go forward.
And Deshaun Watson's one pass, complete, looking good, get him off the field.
If you're only going to throw one pass, let's make it a complete.
And it was pretty.
All right. When we come back, we will move on from the NFL. You're listening to the Boss
already?
On the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. All right, we'll come back to NFL.
Right.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So look, as we close out hour one, I do feel a need to give a shout out, not to Johnny Football, but to Johnny Canadian Football. He looked better in his second start.
Well, it would be hard not to. First half interceptions for the first start.
Well, so he had nowhere to go but up.
Right. And you know what? Hey, the guy does seem very dedicated. He signed this contract. I think he's 2 years in the CFL. And he's invested in this team and this city. But I got to say, don't let those numbers fool you. Because while he did do better, I mean, he was 16 of 26 for 168 yards, which sounds fairly decent. He added 3 carries for 36 yards. I mean, 12 yards a carry, that's pretty nice. But he had a goal line fumble that was ugly. You saw it.
Well, he got clobbered.
He got clocked.
Even Jose would have dropped that football.
This is true. I probably would have dropped it.
Oh. But outside of 10 yards, he's 4 for 13. That's what kind of alarms me a little bit.
So Johnny Canadian Football may need to stay north of the border.
He'll
for
be
some
in
time.
Canada for a while. Yeah.
All right. We shall see. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.